The Talk of the Northwest. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Hello and good morning. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 20th of May, 2026. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you are very well indeed. And hopefully we can enjoy your company here for the next 2 hours in the Greg Hughes Show. We've got loads coming up for you, as always. So all the top stories, we'll keep you all across those. We look forward to hearing your comments. I'll give you the numbers in a moment. That and so much more besides. If you want to email the programme, well, it's comments@highlandradio.com. If you want to give us a call, 074-91-25000. Or if you want a WhatsApp or text, including your WhatsApp voice notes, if that suits you, 086-60-25000. And if you want the visual experience of the programme, you're free to come and join us and join the watch party on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, which means you can watch that on your smart devices, you know, your smart TV, your Fire Stick et al. And also we're on Facebook across all of our Facebook pages as well. So it's all good. You can stick around, listen, watch, whatever you want to do. We really do appreciate it. And I don't say that lightly, I mean that. The Tyrconnell Tribune today, a serious collision that saw two cars written off near Illestrin is going to see the council introduce urgent traffic safety measures. Councillor Michael McBride said residents fear that there will be a fatality at the dangerous corner on the back road from Illestrin to Church Hill in the townland of Coolboy. He's been contacted by residents after two drivers had a miraculous escape when their cars collided there recently. He says that clearly there is a need for immediate traffic safety measures to reduce the risk of life or serious injury at the corner. I'm sure if you are familiar with that road, you are familiar with the dangerous area they talk of. It says here that it's going to see the council introduce urgent traffic measures, which would be quite an advancement, because normally, even when we see, quite serious concerns as it relates to safety, the problem is, getting them addressed. But according to the paper, the council is going to introduce urgent traffic safety measures there. OK, well, that's good news if that's the case. The Donegal news this morning, halting Donegal's heartbreaking road death tally is the top target of the county senior guard of figures this bank holiday weekend. They assured the Donegal news that a high visibility presence of traffic guardian top level checkpoints will target drivers after the recent loss of three lives. Seven people have been killed on Donegal roads this year already, and Gardaí say they'll do everything they can over the coming days to prevent more tragedies. The area's new superintendent, Siobhan Mullahan, who is based at Letterkenny Garda Station, delivered this stark message to all motorists. And, we need the guards out, I suppose. And a lot of people will say, well, I never see the guards, or I don't see a checkpoint. They're there. But the reality is it comes down to us. We're the road users, whether we're driving or cycling or walking. We are the road users. And it's not a nanny state either. We have to take our share of responsibility over this weekend. And the reason why is statistically they're more dangerous and lots of people will be around. And we just have to be extra, extra careful, because it's in our hands. The guards will do their bit, but it's in our hands. Record-breaking, over 1 million passengers used Derry's train station. There's more inside the paper. Quite a figure there. That's the Derry News, by the way. I want to read the story about Ireland and Israel playing football. But Israel at the moment, after their genocide in Palestine, broadly recognised as such, are doing the exact same in Lebanon now. Very similar language, asking civilians to move out of swathes of southern Lebanon because they're effectively going to carpet bomb it, and everything in that area is deemed to be an official target. But I couldn't find that coverage in any of the papers to put the next story into context, so I took it off the internet. So Israel's military says it has carried out fresh strikes on southern Lebanon, targeting what it called Hezbollah infrastructure. Social media videos from Tyre, one of Lebanon's biggest city, show dust-covered crowds of people gathered around collapsed buildings. On Wednesday, the Israel Defense Forces had urged residents to move north of Sahrani River, about 25 miles from the border. The IDF said it would act with extreme force, accusing Hezbollah of repeated ceasefire violations. Hezbollah, which has accused Israel of violating the ceasefire, said its fighters had clashed with Israeli troops on Wednesday. So this is the same as we saw in Palestine, sort of collective punishment. There's no justification if Hezbollah are firing rockets or drones or whatever it might be. But this is an entire population again being displaced and their infrastructure being destroyed to leave nothing for them to return. And why might Israel do that? But anyway, so that's what's happening. As I say, I couldn't find the coverage in any of the papers today. That's not a criticism. Maybe that developed overnight. But we're going to play Israel in soccer, which is remarkable. And we've heard the two ministers say that they are not going to attend. But we're asking our players to do so. I wonder how free is their will not to play against Israel if they so wish. Because really, what this does, if we do play Israel, whether you agree with Israel or don't agree with Israel, this point still stands, so bear with me, please. If we are introducing bills like, you know, the Occupied Territories Bill, where we've made this bold commitment not to buy fruit and veg, but if we are doing that, and if we are criticising Israel, and we're doing all of this, why are we still playing them in soccer? Well, why don't we just start playing Russia in soccer as well? You know, why has Russia been banned from the Eurovision, from the European Football Championships, from the World Cup, etc.? You know, in the Houses of Parliament, the Dáil, the Seanad, were critical of Israel, were seeking to not take their produce as some sort of a protest. We say we're going to lead out in Europe to try and get some sort of EU-wide sanctions, yet we're asking our soccer players, sport, to effectively counterbalance that and say, well, you know what, they're all right, we'll play a bit of soccer. When I say they, I'm not talking about Israel as a whole. I don't know the people, and I'm sure the government's actions aren't on behalf of all of their people. I'm speaking about the current government, the country, that is running the country. So I don't understand. The circle cannot be squared in my mind, but there is growing expectation in government, that's the Ireland government, that Ireland's forthcoming soccer matches against Israel will be moved outside the country amid rising security concerns. Ireland's players have been called upon to boycott the Nations League fixture in October in protest at the war in Gaza. Sports ministers Patrick O'Donovan and junior minister Charlie McConnell both said yesterday they would not attend the fixture when asked if they would consider not going as a form of personal protest. Now again, if those two guys have decided they're not going, why? And why are we fulfilling these fixtures then? So they, the government, can effectively say, well, we didn't endorse it, we didn't go, but our football players are being asked to do so. Anyway, reading on, any decision to move the fixture from Dublin's Aviva Stadium to a neutral venue in another country rests solely with the FAI. Government sources have told the Irish Daily Mail they expect to receive confirmation that the fixture will be moved in the coming days. Minister O'Donovan hinted yesterday at the Oireachtas Sports Committee that such plans were afoot. Again, so I would appreciate it. I'm not playing possum here. I'm not being purposely silly. I just want some of you out there maybe to help me understand. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and the text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. Now, I know the audience is probably a little younger at this time of year, so I'll try and be careful with my coverage of the front page of the Irish Times. Traumatic instances to be recalled at Donaldson's abuse trial. Jurors in the trial of former DUP leader Jeffrey Donaldson will hear about difficult and traumatic instances. The two alleged victims in the case claim occurred when they were children. Newry Crown Court has heard. During the opening of the prosecution case yesterday, the jury of seven men and five women was told that Donaldson was always silent when he carried out the abuse on one of his alleged victims. He went on to inappropriately have contact with her. Jurors heard about an alleged rape of one of the alleged victims, known as Complainant B, by Donaldson. She was allegedly abused from the age of 7 to 13. The court also heard, which I think was very interesting to come from today's hearing, the court also heard of a church meeting arranged between Complainant B and Donaldson, this back in the mid-1990s, when he apologised for what he had done in the past. Now, I believe one of the complainants will take, will give evidence today. Very, very tough, very difficult on them, I'm sure. If you're over 50, be careful, be extra careful, because the scammers are targeting you. AI-generated online adverts promoting bogus state-backed investment schemes are being used by sophisticated scammers to target over 50s who own the bulk of Ireland's savings savings glut, they call it here. This is in the Irish Independent. Figures from An Garda Síochána show reports of investment fraud rose by more than 20% last year, with losses exceeding 20 million. Right, so this is why we do these scams. A lot of us might go, well, I'd never get caught out with that, but people are getting caught out every day, and that's why we have to make sure we platform the issues. That continued into 2026 with criminals swift to jump on opportunities created by emerging AI technologies. The fraudsters are using increasingly realistic AI-generated images and videos of politicians and business people to trick consumers. But the bottom line is this, do not invest or give anyone money or details unless you literally know them. You know, why would you do something like that online with your nest egg that might be there for you as you get older? The Farmers Journal, winter finishers continue to reel from persistent beef price cuts, which base quotes or with base quotes for bullocks dropping a further 10 cent to 6.30 to 6.40 a kilogram this week. Someone scribbled all over the paper, so I'm struggling to read it here. Heifer quotes have dropped to 6.40 to 6.50 a kilogram. Finishers are currently staring at losses of 500 to 600 euro ahead on autumn 2025. Purchases of store cattle. It is a problem. It is a problem indeed. Some people are not making back the money they have invested. The Daily Sun, the Irish Sun, tells us that just over half the 2,706 complaints against Gardaí to Fórsa, the office of the, it's not Fórsa, is it Fórsru, the office of the police ombudsman, were deemed admissible. 27% related to dissatisfaction with Gardaí investigations. Roads policing accounted for 15% of complaints and 12% over concerns during arrests. Half of the admissible complaints were referred back to An Garda Síochána to resolve. The figures in the annual report published yesterday cover the last 9 months of 2025. So 2,706 complaints, and over half of those complaints, stroke criticisms, were deemed to be valid. And finally, there's a picture this morning of Michael Kelly in most of the papers. He's the American chap who was arrested in relation to the death of Michael Gaine. And maybe you missed it, but he was arrested eventually. He engaged with the media and protested his innocence. Anyway, a man charged with the murder of Kerry farmer Michael Gaine has been sent forward for trial. US national Michael Kelly, 54, was given the standard alibi warning yesterday by Judge David Waters when he appeared in front of him at Tralee District Court. The judge told Kelly that if he planned to rely on an alibi, he'd have to disclose this to the prosecution within 14 days. All right, that's a look at some of the stories in the papers today. We're going to go now straight to Deputy Charles Ward from the 100% Redress Party. Good morning to you, Deputy.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to all the listeners and viewers.
Right, OK. I just want to talk about what you're talking about in the Dáil. Very important story, and you got a decent response from Micheál Martin, I think, in relation to it. But I want to talk about some speculation surrounding IS-465. We're expecting that due to be released either just before or after the weekend. And I'm hearing some concerns about it, whilst there might be some positives. There could also be delays. What do you understand will be contained within as much as we know?
Well, as much as we know, that we've given the date of either Friday or Monday. And basically, there's a lot of speculation, but that's what it is. It's speculation. It's until you get your eyes on the document and you can start to go through the document. You know, this is what we're waiting for. You know,
one of the big issues within that, though, will be whether or not foundations are included or not. A lot of people waiting very patiently on that. Is your understanding that they will be included?
Well, we're hearing different things, and I don't want to speculate. You know, okay. I would be cautious, but yeah, it's like everything else. We just have to wait till we see. The devil will be in the
detail. My understanding is then that they will be included, but it's going to require legislative change. So if that is the case, and I know, and it's obvious you're trying to avoid speculation, if that is the case, how long might that take, do you think?
Well, you've got to look at it like this, Greg. When this IS465 drops, there is a trigger then that within 6 months that the scheme, the government have to look at the scheme, okay? So you're kind of hoping that we can get this fitted in together because people are waiting years and years to progress this scheme. And for us to progress this scheme properly, you know, IS465 has to be done correctly. And the foundations are included in this, then we have to make sure that it's done in such a way that we can move forward in a positive manner. And that it doesn't mean delay after delay after delay, which has happened before. The people on the ground know what's going on. We all know what's going on in Donegal. This has been going on for 14 plus years. It's time now that the government do the right thing by the people and let's progress this.
My concern would be you know, there it is already kind of stalled to some extent for an awful lot of people. And rather than a positive announcement potentially on fans, that actually it'll even lock it up more because people that might be on the fence of progressing might wait until such time as they know precisely how foundations would be included, how that would be covered by the legislation, and how that would be covered financially. So in a way, if we get that announcement, is there a danger that this could quite literally push the pause button on this scheme?
At the moment, that you would think that because the government's built-in trigger when IS465 is published means within a six-month period they would have to review it. What I would be pushing for is that that review starts immediately. As soon as IS465 comes into play, we're on it.
But the problem is we're heading into the summer recess.
Yeah, this is the problem, you know, and I think that we need to actually pursue this now. We need to pursue it and make sure that we have a way forward because, you know, every time it's delay after delay. And Greg, you know, you've covered this for years. We've got into how many summer recesses from 2020, 2021, where we're waiting on stuff, legislation, and now it's coming to the stage again where this could be potentially the same issue again. But this time it's got... The scheme has to evolve and it has to include the foundations and the amount of people that are left behind. And it's a series of small fixes in the long term that could actually get people out and help them get on with their lives.
Okay. Well, listen, we will obviously analyse and break down the implications of all of this. It might be Tuesday before it's released. It's a public holiday on Monday, but I don't know. Maybe it's just a case of hit and return on a keyboard.
Greg, can I just say that?
Yeah, please.
That's the way it will be done. It will be dropped into their the NSAI website.
Okay, right. Yeah,
and that's how it's done. So it's automated. It could be just a flick of the button. Right, don't know.
Okay, right. Now you raised an issue in the door. We know how stressful this whole process can be, and when something is very stressful, the one thing that can perhaps make it slightly less stressful is clear communication. Now, you raised the issue of and I wonder, is it an isolated issue, Charles, of a Donegal woman who got conflicting information, really highs and lows stuff? So outline that story that you gave the Dáil yesterday.
Yeah, so a woman has made contact with me regarding her family situation, and her family situation where they applied to the scheme in 2022, an IS465 registered engineer came out, tested the house, done all the stuff the engineer's meant to do, basically came back and said, this house needs to be demolished, it's structurally unsafe. Then for the housing agency then, wouldn't accept that and give her an option two. She appealed that. She'd been waiting since 2022. And then all of a sudden, on the 18th of May, she gets an email 9 o'clock in the morning saying that it's going to be full demolition and that she can get on with her life. Now, I spoke to her regarding this and she was delighted. Absolutely. It was like the weight of the world had lifted off her shoulders. Mm. Her and her husband are hitting towards the 60 mark. They've done everything in their life right, worked hard, put their kids through college, and their home has crumbled. And finally, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Only several hours later, an email sent out saying that there was a mistake and that it's now been sent back to the housing agency for them to make a determination on. That means you'll have to go and get testing again and go through the whole process again. But during this, it's the communication I have the issue with, where this woman was waiting in April for a decision and contacted the relative bodies regarding this and was told that the person dealing with this is on holiday. She'll open her email and let you know. This is unacceptable way to be treating people in defective concrete homes. And I've said this, unacceptable that they have to be left for somebody in Dublin to open up an email to read out to them. And then when they do open up an email and send them the correspondence, it's the wrong correspondence. It's a ridiculous situation. This is driving people over the edge.
Yeah,
and it can't be tolerated.
And just to remind people, option two is outer and inner leaf demolition, leaving the internal walls. Like, I think people, and correct me if I'm wrong there, but I think people will be astonished that that's still happening. Because we're debating whether or not fans might be included or not. Can you imagine spending hundreds of thousands of euro building a new house around defective blocks? It's mental.
It's mental, Greg. And the fact of the matter is that house then, at the moment, can't be sold. Who's going to buy it? Who's going to buy a house that's retaining defective materials? You know, at the end of the day...
Like, some of those walls are weight-bearing.
These walls are weight-bearing, and they cause... So when you... I'll just give you a quick one. If you remove all the outer walls and you leave the roof sitting on the internal wall to rest, damage will occur. And it's just because these walls do not suffer the same weather damage as the exterior and interior walls that are carrying water... They're still damaged. They're still defective. They're still defective materials. It's just because they're using the external, the inside of the house. They are defective blocks. They contain the same damaged material that's in the outer leaf and inner leaf.
Might that be also addressed in this new IS465?
I pray that we finally follow science. That's what we're looking at. If we follow science and do this the correct way, then there is a way out of here. But if we don't, then we're kicking it down the road again. It should have been from the beginning, I've said it, full demolition and foundations taken out. You cannot leave the risk to families with foundations left in if it occurs down the line.
There's no answer to this, but of course, says, well, maybe there is. We're due to start demolition right now. Do I hold off or wait? I mean, I presume if they begin that process now and foundations are included, but that could take months upon months upon months to be formalised in legislation.
Yeah.
But we're also talking about multiple tens of thousands of euro if they decide to take out their own fans. What do you say to someone like that?
This is it, Greg. You know what I mean? I would say to anybody on this scheme now, consult with your engineer, okay? And talk to your engineer regarding this. This is a decision that you shouldn't have to make. You should be able to get on with your life, but it's like everything else. Right now, the way the scheme is right now, you have to pay for them foundations. And depending on what it is, Greg, we all look at houses and we think they're the same. We don't know what's going on underneath the ground.
This is worrying because, you know, what does this person do in the situation? No one can actually advise them what to do. That's the sad thing. They have to make their call. But also what we don't know, because we did see some increases in the past and there was a retrospective element to it, like, we don't even know maybe in the process whether or not there is a retrospective element to including foundations. I'm not saying there will be, but we simply don't know. And if there were, we don't know how far back it might go. So it's a real catch 22.
And Greg, we have to remember there was a number of families left behind with the last retrospective payment that never received it.
And it's a tiny number in the wider scale of things. It's crazy. It was a couple of million.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a couple of million. And I just want to say something when I've got you on here. I'm doing another QPL today regarding a family with a disability who have an outer leaf remediation granted to them. They have the lady of the house. She was paralyzed in a car accident. And basically what happened was there's a disability hoist hooked onto the wall of a house that's crumbling, but they've given them outer leaf remediation. And I cannot understand why how an engineer could come out and look at a structure building that's failing and give it outer leaf remediation when the inner leaf is just as bad as the outer leaf.
Just and to be
somebody
clear,
with a disability is depending on that internal wall to support them.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure I get the language right and I'm not correcting you. When we say outer leaf, it's both the inner and outer external walls.
So it's outer leaf is the outside that the plaster's attached to outside.
Yeah.
They've been given an outer leaf remediation. Okay.
What option is that then?
That would be it's a hybrid between 2 and 3.
Right, understood. Okay, I get it now. I get it. So two is both external walls. The hybrid between 2 and 3 is an external wall, but you keep the internal wall and the internal walls.
But what's happening here, this is an extension that was built onto a house, okay? This lady's extension is crumbling. They've given her an outer leaf remediation, okay? It's unacceptable. She's a disabled lady who has
the hoist the attached frame, to the wall.
The hoist is attached to the wall, each end of the wall, to help her get out of bed. This wall is structurally unsound and unsafe inside. But an engineer and the housing authority have looked at this and said, external leaf is okay. The outer leaf needs to be replaced.
Given any indication as it relates to social housing?
Nothing yet.
Okay.
Nothing yet.
Right. Right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. That's 100% redress, Deputy Charles Ward. What do you think about that? Does that affect you? 086 60 25,000. It just goes to show, you know, and people are under so much stress and pressure. You know, it really is, until we get this right, and we have to get it right, but until we do, the emotional stress, like, it's chipping away at people's years. There's nothing like financial or home stress. It's up there with the worst stresses. And there's just no doubt that high stress, high pressure like this has a negative impact on people's mental health. Sadly, we know some people have ended their lives over this. There isn't a plaque or a list of names, but we all know. We know, don't we? Because they simply could not take it for many, many different reasons. But before that, there is this very negative impact on people's physical and mental health as a result of the stress. A caller says, is it true if you take down a defective block home, you cannot use the bison slabs again, yet they expect you to build on the same foundations? I'll throw that out to our listeners. Someone would know. That sounds like not the right thing, but maybe. I don't know. Let me know, please. I'll just put out that question again. Is it true if you take down a defective block home, you cannot use the bison slabs again, yet they expect you to build on the same foundations? General texts coming in here now. I'm sick of a local business person on our main street who's using the public footpath for parking and not just for offloading goods. It's there all day. You probably know who you are. On the issue of Israel, hi Gregory, Ireland's fixture against Israel. The game should not be played anywhere. Government position is what we have come to expect, words but no action. How, as a government, can you recognise a genocide and at the same time invite their representatives into our country? Feeble excuses that politics and sport should be separate. Well, we know that that's not the case because we take stands in this area previously. Sport and politics have always been intertwined. What about FIFA, peace, presentation to Trump? Micheál Martin, Simon Harris and every government representative are complicit. Words mean nothing. We need action, and now we have a chance to do something. Morning, Greg. We absolutely should not be playing Israel or having any involvement with the country. Nobody should, until they're held accountable for the horrific atrocities that they have done and are still doing. Mainstream media rarely cover what's actually happening in Gaza or Lebanon most of the time. Israel is portrayed as the victim. It's awful. In years to come, our grandkids will be asking us why we all turned a blind eye. Yes, we reflect on history, don't we? We say, well, how could that have happened? And yet here we are living it live now. Right, on to something completely different. Sinead joins me now. Hi, Sinead.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
I'm fabulous. What about yourself?
Oh, a wee bit stressed out, a wee bit late for a wedding, but sure.
You're not the bride, are you?
No, no, definitely not the bride.
I was going to say, because that'd be okay, right? You know, it's okay if you're a little bit... So I won't delay you. We're trying to reunite people with stuff, right? So the question is, are you missing two bags of shopping? Tell me the story.
So yesterday I finished work a wee bit earlier to get my hair done for the wedding today. I parked on Main Street from roughly 10 past five until 5:45. And then I went into Super Value for the guts of maybe 5-10 minutes from 5:45 to 6:00. And last night I noticed there was two bags in the car, but I just assumed the sister put the recyclable bottles into the car. And then it was only this morning I looked more into it and I was like, hold on a minute here, there's actually groceries in here. So I took it in and looked at it. And yeah, there's a few things. Now, there was ice cream, and I'd say the ice cream is definitely gone with the heat that's in it. But there is one thing that is very salvageable, so I'd love to return that to them because I won't use it.
Well, now you're going to have to tell me, or maybe you can't. It's okay.
It's just a bottle of alcohol.
Oh, right. Okay. yeah. Maybe they'd had one before they put the shopping in the wrong car. Do you think that's what happened? Do you think they maybe...
That's what the sister... Yeah, maybe. Because, I don't know. Because I had a bag of shoes in the back of the car, so you would see. I don't know. Maybe they also have a bag of shoes in their car.
Right, okay. So if you accidentally mislaid your shopping, we have it here. The ice cream is a goner, but there's other stuff that can be... But there's two things, Sinead. Please lock your car when you're not in it.
Don't tell me, Greg, I'm being fly, being
old. I'm getting Garda Grania Doherty onto you every Tuesday morning. She's saying the same thing. Come here. I am the biggest culprit at that. I am. So I'm not having a go. I'm only joking. Right. So were you in Dunlow yesterday? Did you misplace your shopping? Sinead, do you want to give a shout out to the happy couple before I let you go?
Sorry?
Do you want to give a shout out to the happy couple before I let you go? It's up to you. You don't have to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Laura, John Galler.
Okay. Well, listen, hopefully
they have a good day.
Have a wonderful day yourself, Sinead. Thanks for squeezing us in. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye,
Sinead. Bye-bye, Sinead. So if you were shopping yesterday, I remember twice my mother back in the day. There was no... It was when people used to go into banks, you know, so mum and dad would go into Donegal Town, park outside the AIB there, you know, the usual stuff. Dad would sit in the car, double park, don't you know. Mum would run into the bank. But on two occasions, she opened the door, fully got into the car and sat there and looked at the fella driving the vehicle and was like, well, that's not Sylvester. What do I do? And I had to get out of the car twice. She did that, which is quite amusing watching on. Have you had any issues like that yourself? Ever got into the wrong car? But anyway, listen, I don't want to detract from Sinead. She wants to reunite these items and this bag to the rightful owner. Independent Councillor Declan Meehan is my next guest, and he's joining us to outline his calls on the HSE to review how breast check appointments are allocated, because 40% of women called to attend for breast check did not attend the first screening. These are new figures, Declan, but it's not a new problem. This is something that has been going on for quite some time. We need to get to the bottom of it, don't we?
Absolutely, Greg. This is a critical women's health issue, and breast check provides an excellent service, but it's very much dependent on people attending and people knowing when and where they should attend for their breast check appointment. It's also very dependent on them being called within the timeframes that they're supposed to be. So breast check is designed for as a screening program for women between the ages of 50 and 69. But even on breast check's website, you can see that the information provided from the HSE says that you might be called when you're 50 or you might be called when you're 53. But the reality is, by the time you're 53, you should have been called twice, never mind for your initial appointment. So the waiting list figures that were provided by the HSE at Tuesday's Regional Health Forum meeting show that across the West and North West, nearly 2,500 women are waiting more than 2 years for their first breast check appointment, and over 18,000 women are waiting more than 2 years for their callback appointment. So there is clearly a huge issue with breast check. And I would argue and certainly put it to the HSE on Tuesday that there's something wrong with the appointment allocation system and communication with women when 40% of women nationally are not turning up for their first appointment.
Mm. That 20,000 figure that you mentioned when you say, you know, they're waiting more than 2 years for the first breast check, I mean, they're not actively waiting. They haven't signed up. They're on a list effectively. That doesn't really matter, but it's a point of clarification. But 40% of women that are called do not attend. 4 out of 10, whatever it is, whether or not they're saying, do you know what, it's grand, or I'm too young, or it's too far away, or that time doesn't suit me, or they forget they got the call. Whatever it is, we need to get to the bottom of that, because unfortunately some of these services, dependent where they are, and we've seen it in the past, are use it or lose it.
Absolutely, Greg. And look, one of the issues is, as with anything in the HSE and in their health service, is a resource issue. So we have the breast check van that is mobile throughout the county, but it is largely based in Letterkenny for 6 months and Donegal for 6 months, Donegal Town. So that's quite far away, obviously, when it's based in Donegal Town from large parts of the county. And that could be one of the issues why people aren't turning up for their appointments across County Donegal. Now, the HSE have added a number of vans across the west and northwest over the past number of years, but it's clear that more needs to be added. One of the, I suppose, explanations from the HSE is that, you know, this demographic is a rapidly growing in numbers, people aged over the age of 50. But we know that. This isn't a surprise to us. We know that we have an ageing population. We need to put the resources in where they are needed. And this is one example of that.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely needs an investigation to find out what the situation is. You're to raise that on Tuesday, are you?
Tuesday just passed.
Okay, and what was the response then? Sorry, Declan. What was the response?
Yeah, the response, Greg, was that kind of every point that I made, Tony Canavan, Regional Executive Officer for HSE West and Northwest, accepted it, yeah. Particularly around the need for better communication and for different ways to communicate with women about their appointments. The vast majority of communication is via letter. And again, if 40% of people aren't turning up for their appointment, then there's obviously issues with that. So they are trying to encourage people to contact Breast Check to provide them with email addresses and phone numbers as well. And what's also really important to say is this is for people who are not symptomatic. This is a regular screening program. And anyone who is worried or feels that they are symptomatic, or if they have a particular family history of breast cancer, that they should make an appointment with their GP to go and speak to them about their concerns, whether they might have symptoms or whether they might just have concerns from a family history point of view, and not just wait on the breast check screening appointment.
Yeah, because I presume those waiting on follow-ups, the 18,000, you know, their risk status increases slightly. I'm not saying that as a medical opinion, but what I'm saying is that all of this doubles actually the waiting time for them, I presume. If 40% don't turn up but the slots are there, you know what I mean? It pushes everyone further down the track. Okay, listen, thank you very much for that. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, Councillor Declan Meehan there. A caller straight in says, I don't feel comfortable going to a van for breast check. It's a terrible and embarrassing have to go to a van instead of the hospital. If more men got breast cancer, we would have a proper clinic with mammograms available in a clinic and not a car park. Now, no shade here. This is everyone's entitled to do what they want to do. But if you are a woman out there and you have been called for an appointment and didn't go, can you help us understand why? Is it because, and as I say, it's completely up to you, and there's no right or wrong answer per se, certainly from me in terms of criticism. Was it distance? Was it timing? Was it, you know, it'll be okay, I'll be grand for this one, and sure, I'll be recalled for another one, and I check my breasts in the shower and everything seems fine. You know, like, if you can give us a bit of an understanding and insight, and anonymously, of course, you can just WhatsApp us 086 60 25,000. But I'm not prying into your private life or anything like that. It's just in case some of you out there want to help us. This caller, I think, is amongst those that's not comfortable going to a van for their breast check or her breast check. So that could be one of the reasons. let us know, please. 086 60 25,000. The number of families, this is back to defective blocks, the number of families, including thousands of children, who are suffering stress, anxiety and trauma because of this housing scandal is disgraceful. It is. And do you know, there's certain elements of covering this since the beginning. One of the things I thought really was quite telling was that one of the schools in Inishowen, a common theme of creative writing as part of their education was defective concrete blocks. So if they had to write a song, it'd be about defective concrete blocks. If they had to write a poem, there'd be something about defective concrete blocks. If they had to write an essay, same, DCB. And, you know, that just shows how intertwined it is, rather than it being about adventure or unrequited love or exploration. We've got a whole generation, multiple generations of children where, and it was very prominent in one particular school, where when they get paper and pen to hand, they contextualize something in their life through DCB. That's tough. That has an emotional impact on them. There's just no doubt about that. On the issue of breast check, it's a little cramped in the waiting area, but it's very fast and efficient. I much prefer the van to entering the hospital and waiting for hours. That's the flip side. So maybe our previous listener might consider that. Greg, I was talking to a lady from Ukraine last week and she told me she was going on holidays. I asked her, was she going somewhere nice? Yes, she said, I'm going home for 2 weeks. I was taken back as I thought the reason the Ukrainians were here in Ireland was because they were fleeing war. I'd like to know what people think of that, as we are giving millions to Ukraine to keep them here. If things are so bad in Ukraine, how come they can go back for a holiday? Thanks. That comes in for Caroline. I don't know. I can't speak on behalf of the lady. I doubt she's going back to Kyiv at the moment because it is being bombarded by Russia. But there are large swathes of that country whereby there's very little activity, Russian activity. And that's not to say a bomb couldn't drop in your head at any given moment, but there is very little. That being said, we do have a scheme whereby people can not only flee Ukraine if they have concerns. It could simply be, not simply be, it could be because they don't want their sons to be conscripted. That can happen as well. Or it could be the fact that they can be far better off here, better social welfare, better wages if they're working, and a real big lump of cash per month towards accommodation. So those are the rules, but they're not compelled to stay here. They don't have to stay here. It's not part of it. So I suppose those are some of the options. Back to road safety. To the lorry driver on the Clare Road near the little roundabout Donegal Town at 4:15 yesterday, tailgating line of traffic, blasting the horn, expecting everyone to pull in so you could overtake into oncoming traffic. It's reckless and dangerous. Maybe show a bit of respect for other road users before someone gets hurt. Not the first time this has happened either. What would you do in that situation? That's clearly dangerous driving. I would be flabbergasted if there wasn't a telephone number or a company name or logo on that articulated lorry. If you saw that, maybe this listener did, maybe they didn't, but if you saw that, would you be inclined to take the number plate and ring the company and say, look, I was driving around Donegal Town yesterday, 251DL, blah, 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 was honking the horn, overtaking dangerously. Would that be the responsible thing to do, or would that be a bit telling tales? I don't know. Good morning, Greg. Any possibility you can discuss how the new EU Pact on Migration and Asylum officially comes into law on June 12th across the European Union? What will this mean for us? Interesting. Let's line a guest up, or maybe we might require two. But yes, of course we will find out the ins and outs of that. That's a very important matter because it does affect us. We were talking about tourism yesterday. Many of you messaged in relation to that. The weather is such a help, says a listener. This is a glorious day today. Inishowen looks magnificent. More weather like this, please. You're right, of course. But I think also what we must understand, people coming to this part of the world are not coming here for the weather as such. Like, say, for instance, we were talking yesterday about golfing holidays. Like, people coming here from Germany or America or England or wherever, they know what weather they're getting. They know it's going to be breezy. They know most likely they're going to be playing a links course. And they come here for that challenge because they see Rory McIlroy and the boys doing it on courses in Ireland and Scotland, etc. So I think when we live here, we live and die for the weather. I think anyone coming here kind of knows what to expect. Interesting, like in Spain, where you go on holidays, potentially, a lot of the locals head north. They head north to cooler climes for the summer holidays. Isn't it interesting? We're going from this weather to holiday in their backyard, and they're leaving the backyard to go on holiday somewhere else where it's cooler.
The Talk of the Northwest, the Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
More of your comments are coming in this morning. A caller says, what do the powers that be plan to do with the current tourist office? That building cost the guts of nearly 2 million the time it was constructed. Nothing wrong with where it was located. Well, a lot of people within the industry and also feedback from guests believed it was in the wrong place, but that's your opinion. It has now moved temporarily to On Green On Theatre to eventually, it seems, move into the courthouse on a permanent basis. So that's where the tourism office now, just in case you're advising people where to go. Interesting question, what to do with that old building. I was at the opening of that building, actually, now that I recall. I think I was. I certainly was at... Maybe it was a different launch. I thought I was at the opening of that anyway. Greg, Letterkenny is Donegal's largest town, needs a tourist information office that's open 12 months of the year, not just for a few months of the year. It's crazy that the office in Letterkenny is closed more of the year than it is open. Still people messaging in on the issue of sport. And by the way, we love to talk about all things, be it news or sport or anything else for that matter. A caller says, Ryan McHugh's incident at the weekend, straight red for sure, but David Clifford came on. That happens in nearly every game. So calm down, lads. Come on, it's a man's game. That's what football used to be, real ding-dong. But you can't draw blood either. I do understand where you're coming from, but there are levels, right? And young McHugh, he's not young anymore, is he? He would get his fair share of abuse on the pitch, and some of that is just, you know, the cut and thrust of the game. But we were talking to the lady behind Clan & Co. It's not for dating. Some people have become dating or have started dating as a result of attending some of their events, but it's about creating friendship groups and what have you. But a caller did text in on dating. Why does someone not set up a dating place for seniors? As someone who dedicated my life to work, more the fool me, I've now found myself in a place where I'd love to have a partner and have something to do and someone to do things with. Very, very interesting point. Of course, people would suggest, you know, join a club or start a sport or hobbies or whatever maybe you are. But I think it's nice if you're in that space to find yourself in a space where other people of a similar age or interest are also looking for dates. I don't know, would you be in favour of such a thing? Lots of you messaging in on breast check too. I recently had a mammogram in the van. No issue with it. Nice and clean. Two lovely and caring nurses. It's based in Donegal Town at this time. Alternates with Letterkenny, as we heard. I travelled from Inishowen. Just think it'd be good to have one based in both places. Thanks. Yes, indeed. Yeah, thank you. Good response. Morning, Greg. I went to my breast check appointment 2 years ago. Just routine. I had no cause myself to go, but just took up the offer. Very professional and private, seeing it's a mobile type van. Anyway, just as a precaution, I was sent to Galway for further examination, but thankfully all was perfect. My point is to take up the offer. It's only 15 minutes and could save your life. And it's quite interesting because I interviewed someone not too long ago who had had a screening done. I don't believe it was part of breast check, but they had a screening done and it was clear at that time. And then they got the breast check call for the screening. And this was only a short couple of months later, and they were humming and hawing as to whether to go or not, and they did go, and it did identify very early stages breast cancer, and thankfully they've gone through the treatment and are well now. But it just goes to show, if that person had attended the invite, the cancer potentially could have progressed. Right, now, a new campaign is encouraging you to order your tea or coffee at Skelga and get a discount. It's another brainchild of Leanra Letterkenine. Barbara Nicol is the coordinator there and joins us on the programme now. Imagine why, Barbara. Thank you very much for joining us.
Imagine why, Greg.
Right, so nice little offer, I suppose. How did this come about, and I suppose how many businesses are involved?
Okay, so this is all part of a campaign that we're running at the moment about Be a Dagael, Lower Jutta Gaelagahan La. So, you know, be a Gael and speak a bit of Irish every day. So we have about 300 people signed up for that at the moment. And we wanted to give people a very practical way of doing that, as well as, you know, boosting what we do in and around the town with the businesses. So we have 10 cafes signed up for this. So this will run for 10 weeks from the 1st of June to the 9th of August. And we will have a spotlight on a different cafe each week during this camhurch or trail of cafes around the town.
It's not a quiz. You're giving people all the tools they might need to give it a go. And that's what it's about, isn't it? It's giving it a go. So the participating CAFs presumably will have the phraseology on show, or it's available for people to scan and get a hold of themselves.
Well, we have phrase cards. So we have phrase cards left in all of the cafes that are involved, and people can pick one of those up and take them with them. A lot of people have already picked up our original phrase cards. So this is a different one that is all about, you know, ordering tea and coffee, and they can take those with them. They can also pick up a loyalty card or a trail passport, as we're calling it, and get that stamped for every visit when they go in and they order an Irish. And then they're able to register that with us, send us a photograph in at the end or whenever it's full, and they'll be entered into a draw for a €100 voucher. So we're having a bit of fun with the names of the coffee. We are aware that, yes, you can just call an espresso because it's Italian anyway. We are, you know, so we've called it a cafe fui vru, which means cafe under pressure, because that's how you make an espresso.
Yeah.
You know, so we've done that with all of the names. So people can use the Irish name that's on the card, or they can just go in and say, but white yum latte let a hull, you know, whatever suits. But we're just encouraging people to use a bit of Irish to get into the habit, because we want people to create a daily habit of speaking Irish. Because they'll, you know, it's a habit for life.
If you did it three or four times in a row, why would you revert? You might say, right,
exactly,
you know what, I'm gonna keep it here. And also too, it's I think it's a nice little thing for tourists coming as well.
Absolutely. And that's something that we've found with the beer mats and phrase cards that we've had out since last year. They've been hugely popular with the tourists and with local people. So we hope that some of the tourists will also get involved in this. They love encountering the language. They love the opportunity to learn a bit and to speak a bit. And what we have said to the cafes is everything is there. You can scan the QR code on the phrase card and you can listen to every phrase, so that people will be able to practice a wee bit in advance, or if they don't have any Irish, they'll be able to learn these things and then go in and try them out. So it's having a bit of crack, but it's also encouraging people to grow their confidence, to use the language on a daily basis.
All right, and you get 20 cent off your cup of coffee, which is not insignificant.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
No.
And we're really grateful to the cafes that are involved. You know, we have Kernan's, Hatch, The Counter, The Kitchen, Saunder, Brew Lab, Himalayan Cafe, Ianella, the new Kernan's as well, opposite Don's, and O'Hare's. And it's a big deal that they're all involved. And our Kirkle Cora, for the next 10 weeks, we'll be on a camcourch as well, because we'll go to whichever cafe is on the spotlight for that week. And we will have our Kirkle Cora in that cafe. So it's all a bit of crack.
Excellent. Well done. Thank you very much for that. People can get more information how? It's all there. We've mentioned everything, but you know yourself.
Yeah, they can contact me on 086 075 1663. They can have a look at our website, leanralc.ie. They can call into any of those cafes that I've mentioned, because they'll all have their phrase cards and their loyalty cards available. And as well as that, there are posters to go up in the windows explaining what people need to do, given the details of the calendar of which cafe is on when. So it's all there.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much indeed. Look after yourself, Barbara. Pleasure as always. Barbara Ní Cathal there. Now, we were sent in an appreciation post, which is nice to share. So let me do that for you now. Hi, Greg. I hope this finds you well. I just wanted to relay how grateful I am to a member of staff from Letterkenny Hospital. My elderly dad has been re-diagnosed with cancer. Huge blow, as is for all families inflicted by this horrible disease. We are anxiously awaiting a call for a CT scan to determine if there is any spread. As you can imagine, it's a difficult time. We got a call on Monday to say he could be seen on Wednesday at 8:50 a.m. for the scan. The gentleman calling was named Ronan. From the minute he said hello, I could feel the warmth, compassion and empathy in his voice. He went above and beyond, taking so much time, detailing the best entrance that I could drop my dad off so he would have the least amount of walking to do, and where I could obtain a wheelchair and how to get parked up. Fast forward to this morning, the hospital journey normally takes us around 50 minutes from home. So to be there in good time, to get him out and get parked, I left home 1 hour and 30 minutes prior to the appointment time. On approach to the O'Donnell Park area, I soon realised there was quite a long tailback. I'm sure this is probably normal now with work and school traffic. And we faced the same again at the Glencar Road, resulting in us not reaching the hospital until 9 a.m. I was so grateful of Ronan's advice and was able to drop my dad at the old A&E entrance while I parked the car. I rushed and finally got to the radiology unit at 9:10. As you can imagine, fairly frazzled, and my elderly father very unsettled at being late for the appointment. On arrival, we were met with Ronan and another lovely lady with the biggest smile and welcome. They told us there was no panic, to relax, take a seat, and they'd be with us shortly. Ronan then took it upon himself to advise where I could get a wheelchair to take my dad back to the car, and if I needed any help, he would arrange a porter. The CT area was busy, and the time, care and attention he took with us was really outstanding and so much appreciated. It was just the most heartwarming experience and what is a tough time for us as a family. If Ronan's listening, we just wanted to say a huge thank you. You are just amazing at your job. That comes in from a listener there. And I hope you get the best possible news in relation to that scan. We all know, unfortunately, we all know, don't we? The majority of us do, or we will. We all know what it's like, whether it's ourselves or someone close to us. And I think sometimes it can be worse when it's someone close to you, because you kind of feel a little bit helpless about things. But anyway, as I say, I genuinely appreciate you sending that in. Fair play to Ronan and the team. And also, I really genuinely hope that you get the best possible news for your dad, because I do know it's a toughie. A member of An Garda Síochána says a listener cannot give a full description of a person they're looking for fear of stirring up racial tension. Yet, you're quite happy to call for a boycott of a football match against the Israeli football team, knowing it will stir up anti-Semitic tension. For someone who claims to be unbiased in his reporting, your opinions speak loud and clear to the listeners. I am unbiased, but I'm not going to be unbiased about what Israel has done to Palestine. I'm sorry. It's just like... it's not just me, it's many states, it's many organisations have said the same. What they've done in there, killing close on 100,000 people and carpet bombing it into oblivion, and now starting the same tact on South Lebanon. On this occasion, I'm only stating facts, and I don't think, and I hate to bring up the Nazis as an example, but I don't think, you know, there was an expectation to be unbiased in your reporting of what Germany did to the Jews. What I will say is our listeners, the listeners to this show, are clever, and they understand that when we talk about the actions of a nation, we're not talking about the people within it. There was no reference to Jews, for an example. So you can have a good time for Jewish people, but still recognise, as many Jewish people do, that the actions of the government, of which that leads the country, are inappropriate. As it relates to the Garda description, we've carried that information here on this programme previously. I understand where you're coming from, and I do understand there can be sensitivities as well, but we have carried that information where it was relevant. And personally, and I've said this off the record to Gardaí, if it is relevant and can actually lead to a victim getting justice, we shouldn't be all pussyfooting around the place. If I'm a white person, I commit a crime, I'm a white person committing a crime. If it's an Asian person committing a crime, they're an Asian person committing the crime. And if the easiest way to catch either of us is to claim that I was a white male in my early 20s or an Asian male in their early 20s, when that should be deployed, that should be used. I've had a number of comments in today. Now, I'm not familiar with the story. I have a number of comments in today saying, why aren't you talking about two foreign paedophile stings in Dublin yesterday? I don't have that information. Also, it happened in Dublin. But I never get messages in about, you know, I never get messages in, funny enough, about, you know, a video circulating on social media of what appears to be an older white gentleman zooming in, taking pictures of kids on a beach, or, you know, a grandfather being convicted during the week of historical sex abuse, or, you know, racial profiling Dennis Donaldson as he faces charges which he denies. All of this stuff that goes on is absolutely horrendous, and I don't weed it out based on someone's race or where they're from. You know, it should all be treated. And I think there should be as much horror and uproar with the abuse of children and the misuse of children. And I don't care where you're from. It should be, you should be disgusted. But people seem to ignore, you know, like Donegal Daily, for example, do a lot of court report. And there's at least two or three, it seems like there's at least two or three cases of child abuse, historical child abuse, and no one really seems to say anything. And, you know, there's a suspected approach of a child somewhere, and it could be someone who's not from this country, and the internet goes on fire. I'm not saying one's right. What I'm saying, if we all got as angry at the abuse of children, regardless of where people are from, maybe we could call it out more and maybe we could stop it. But anyway, I'm ranting and I'm raving and I'm apologise for that. But anyway, I take your point, by the way. I'm not trying to incite racial tension. And actually, when I was talking at that time, which you may have heard, I specifically referenced that I wasn't speaking about the Israeli population as a whole, but about the government that's making those decisions. So I was very, very clear with that distinction. Now, welcome back to the programme. I'm joined on it now by Clare County Councillor Pat Burke. Good morning to you, Pat. Thank you for joining us here from the northwest of Ireland.
Yeah, good morning from County Clare.
Yes, indeed. Now, Clare County Council has passed a motion urging the Department of Transport to make high-vis vests mandatory for pedestrians and for cyclists as well. And this is an argument that listeners have made many times in context to this show, Pat, but I don't believe it's ever come up as a motion at the County Council. So I presume the background to this motion is as obvious as it might sound.
Yes, indeed. And since I put down the motion, it has gathered legs, I suppose. Hence why I'm on with you this morning, if you like. I've been contacted by other radio stations as well, indeed. And I suppose that one of the national radio stations there was difficult enough the other morning because they said, oh, you know, is this proposal making it mandatory for people in towns and cities and nightclub or late nights on the streets of Dublin and all of this, you know, that the people would be ticketed if they didn't wear a high-vis jacket, if it was made, you know, legislated for. So I suppose really where the
can I just say something in relation to that, which I don't understand why the default is to try and pick holes in it. We have driving and we have dangerous driving. So Gardaí would always have discretion. So we could have walking and cycling and dangerous walking and cycling. It's not brain surgery here. There would be discretion from an Garda Síochána. They could determine at a time, not that you're standing outside the pub having a vape for crying out loud, but if you're walking on a B road home and you're hard to see and you're reported or they come across you.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to make that point, and I'm glad you mentioned it there. Rural Ireland, it's an issue. And as late as this morning, would you believe it, I was out early enough this morning, and there was a woman out walking. And while it was bright at 7 o'clock this morning, you know, it wouldn't have cost her much time to stick on a high-vis jacket there where she could be seen further away from until you get up close or whatever, you know. So that's, and particularly at the darkness of the evenings, I kind of find in the springtime of the year when the clocks change and we get a bit of a stretch in the evening and people go for their walk in the evening, they don't realise it gets as dark as soon as it does. And before they reach home, it has got quite dark and they haven't bothered to wear a high-vis jacket. It just beggars belief, really, you know, that in the interest of safety, I think it should be mandatory. And as you said, then leave it to the guards to use their own discretion.
Yeah, and I presume it's not really about fining people or dragging people before the courts, but to try and change, like say for instance, you know, I don't know how many fines the guards issued this year for a tail light being out, for an example, but under the rules of the road, you're obliged to have your tail lights in working order. So I would put it in that space whereby we sort of change attitudes on the roads.
Yes. And part of when I spoke at the council meeting was, you know, calling for a campaign by the RSA. We hear all the ads on radio and television to don't ever drink and drive or, you know, don't be using your mobile phone while driving and that. So why they can't highlight this more prominently, I'm not so sure. You know, the RSA, in conjunction with the Farmers' Journal, for example, at the National Ploughing Championships, they throw out all these free high-vis jackets to families and kids and everyone who walks by. But that's not enough, obviously. There has to be a major campaign to make the roads safer for everybody, be it the motorist or the pedestrian or cyclist. I just can't understand. Some people are great and they'll wear high-vis vests out walking in the daylight hours, you know, not to mind in the evenings or at night. But to see people, I had a close shave, I suppose, a month ago or so, with somebody with dark clothes walking in a rural road at night. It's just mind-boggling, really.
Interesting, there's been a bit of a pushback by the Irish Cycling Campaign.
Yes, I'm interested in that one. I would have thought that they would have welcomed something like this, and that if it was made mandatory, it would deter people from cycling. I can't get my head around that at all now, and I don't know the people involved in that, but I heard that there was a bit of a kickback from them, all right, but I didn't speak to them directly.
Yeah, and the thrust of what they're saying is, and I get it, is that more effort needs to be put into minimising risk from those who inflict the most damage, which is car, trucks and buses. But rather than finger-pointing, and this is what I've tried to change the conversation on this show in the past, rather than it just drilling down to a cars versus bikes thing again and again and again, where we absolutely get nowhere, it's about a collective responsibility and what we all can do, because we're all tired of that. I am, anyway, tired of the combative nature of the road safety conversation when you talk about cyclists and lorries and cars and pedestrians all using the same space.
Yes, and I had an email from somebody yesterday, critical as well, saying that it would be more in my line to promote active travel and cycle lanes in towns and villages and that. And that's all very fine. But in rural Ireland, you're not going to have a cycle lane or a street lights out the countryside. You know, Donegal is a rural county as well, no more than County Clare. And I know, you know, I can imagine you understand where I'm coming from there. It's just not practical. You know, we haven't the money to tar the roads, not to mind install cycle lanes in every back road and street lighting and that. So a bit of common sense is what I'm calling for. I mean, we see modern cars now, for example, have lights on all the time. You know, they're automatically on day and night. So that's to make the oncoming motorist more aware that there is a car coming, I suppose. And why not, you know, adapt the same by wearing a high-vis jacket? I just don't understand why people don't wear them. They're not heavy. They're not a big load to carry. Just put them on and be safe, be seen, I suppose.
Mm-hmm, okay. Let's see what the listeners think. Thank you, Pat. That's Councillor Pat Burke there, Clare County Council. What do you think of that? Would it discourage people from cycling? Would it discourage people from walking? Is it the fact that a lot of them have the big RSA branding on them and people don't like that? I don't believe they're uncomfortable. But why don't we by default wear them? And secondly, would you be in favour of, let's say, the soft enforcement of legislation? I don't think any of us wants people, do we, dragged before the courts because they forgot the high vis. But I think, you know, where there are, as we say on the show all the time, contributing factors. And sometimes when you're talking about a road traffic collision, it's also the behaviour of a cyclist or a walker, for that matter. So what do you think about that crazy idea? Would you like to see something proposed similarly in Donegal County Council? This caller says, I wear high-vis all the time, but in the summer I do find myself not wearing it. But I mean, like in daylight, I presume we'd have to talk about it being dusk or nighttime. I don't think we'll ever get it across the line, nor I'm not even sure it'd be a good idea that people wore a high-vis all of the time. But, you know, they're very light. They can be folded up and put in a backpack. Maybe, you know, if you had one with you and you did an extra 5K and were heading home in dusk, you could whip it out and put it on. But I don't think there's an expectation, is there, or even a proposal that people in broad daylight should wear high-vis, unless I missed Pat referencing that. Right, 086, this is the text or WhatsApp number, 086 60 25,000. We're joined on the show now by Tina McGlynn, who has lung fibrosis. Tina, good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Greg. It's good to have an opportunity to give a bit of information and to raise the profile of lung fibrosis. It's a condition that affects your lungs.
Tina, can I just interject for one moment? I think your phone is sitting on the microphone. So
right.
Let me see.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely perfect. My apologies for that. Yes, go ahead. What were you saying to us, Tina?
Lung fibrosis is a condition that affects the little air sacs in your lung. It can be caused by different things. It could be there could be a familial predisposition to develop it. It could be caused by environmental factors, maybe people working in mining, for example, or in factories where there's a lot of pollutants. That would have been the case years ago. It could be caused by an infection. Certain medications and radiation, for example, might cause it. But the effects of it are that it reduces the amount of oxygen getting to your blood through your lungs. The air you breathe in brings in the oxygen. The little air sacs are surrounded by little blood vessels that carry the oxygen then throughout your body. So with lung fibrosis, it can be a progressive condition, and it causes increasing shortness of breath. So people would find it difficult to just do the ordinary everyday tasks that they'd be used to doing, physical activities, walking, maybe going upstairs and so on. So then they would get a referral through their GP to see a consultant. And there are four respiratory consultants in Letterkenny: General, Dr. Olga Mikulich, Dr. Wilkin, Dr. McCourt, and Dr. Bukhari. And the procedure for getting diagnosis would be that they would have a lung function test, and that can be carried out now in the hub in Letterkenny, for example. And then they would do a 6-minute walking test, and there's a respiratory specialist nurse based at the hub in Letterkenny called Karen Doherty. And then a lung scan needs to be done. It will not show up on a regular X-ray unless the disease is very advanced.
Mm. Tina, so you have lung fibrosis because there's a family history of fibrosis. So whilst you have been diagnosed with the condition, you don't have any sympathy. You don't have any symptoms. Now, is that because luck or medication or your lifestyle, or does it is it unfortunately an indication of what may be to come? Just so we understand.
Yeah, I suppose I got diagnosed very early because of the fact there was a family history of fibrosis. So I had myself referred very early on for a lung scan, and there is evidence that it is there in my lungs, but thankfully it hasn't progressed any, so I don't have any particular difficulty at the moment. But, you know, it is a progressive disease, and it can progress. It can be triggered sometimes by just a lung infection and cause a flare-up, for example. So people experience the progress of fibrosis at different rates. It varies very much from person to person. Generally, people are not diagnosed maybe until they're in their maybe mid-60s or thereabouts, and wouldn't necessarily know they have any issues with their lungs. There's no blood test that can show it, for example, or early X-rays and so on. But there are certain risk factors, as I said already.
As you mentioned, it is progressive, but there's always an advantage, I presume, with early diagnosis. Whilst you had the red flag of a family history, you know, maybe if people are not as hungry as they once were, they're losing weight, they're noticing, you know, that it's a little bit more difficult to walk up the stairs, and they're putting it down to age. Don't ignore any of those factors, I presume, Tina.
Yes, those would be the kind of red flags that would make people suspect that they have something, some problem with their lungs. And if someone does have a problem, they need to get a referral through their GP and have tests carried out. And there are treatments available. You know, for example, there are two medications that have been available for quite a long time, pirfenidone and nintedanib. But they do have side effects. Now, not everybody taking them will have side effects, but they are medications that do cause problems. But now, at the moment, there are new medications in the pipeline, and there's ongoing research and so on. So that would be helpful. Also, physiotherapy. We have very good physiotherapists here in Donegal, and we had a talk at one of our local support group, which meets in Arena 7 on the first Tuesday of the month at 2 o'clock. We had a physiotherapist called Tara Cooper came and did a very good session with us on various techniques to help people who have difficulties with breathing. And also, you know, there
for example, they can be referred to have oxygen provided, maybe just necessary on occasions. People can have an oxygen machine in their own home where they can use it for short periods of time or increasing periods of time as the need arises. And also there are portable oxygenators that can be used going out and about that people can bring with them, because it's very important to remain active and to lead a healthy lifestyle, yeah, and to be socially connected and so on. And people can sometimes feel isolated.
For sure, and I think that's why, and you've literally just set up my next question or my next comment, because a support group was set up in January for people in Donegal with lung fibrosis, and you've just mentioned when it meets, and I want to talk to you about that, what it does, and also the Inishowen branch. But before I get to that, you know, like you, even in your commentary, there's an awful lot of hope, right? A lot of what you've talked about is getting a diagnosis, but how you can continue to live your life, the supports are there. And I'm just thinking someone with a diagnosis of lung fibrosis could be on their own or keeping it to themselves and feel there's no hope or nothing that they can do. And this is almost like a death sentence in their minds or whatever it might be. So that's why it's good if they are inclined to get involved in this support group, to realise that, you know, actually the more active you are and the more full your life is, the better. So the support group is open to anyone with lung fibrosis. Talk to me more about that, the meetings in Letterkenny, what it does, and I think there's an Inishowen branch being looked at too.
Yes, there was an initial meeting set up by the respiratory nurse Carol Doherty in Letterkenny, and a big turnout. A lot of people showed up from all around the county. So it was decided that it was too big a group, really. So we split into two sections. So the Letterkenny and Inishowen group meets at Arena 7 on the first Tuesday of the month at 2 o'clock. And anybody with fibrosis is welcome to come along, and I can give phone numbers to contact. And there's also a support group in the west and south of the county, and they meet in Aris, New Padraic and Gidor on the first Tuesday of the month as well at 2 o'clock. And the idea is to provide ongoing information and support. For example, at one of our meetings, we had Dr. Bukhari came along and did a presentation about fibrosis, about the various medications and treatments that are available, oxygen therapy and so on. And also the physiotherapist that I mentioned already came to one of our meetings. So already we've had quite a good input from the HSE and a lot of support. And also at national level, the support group ILFA, I-L-F-A, which is the Irish Lung Fibrosis Association, is a very active support group or advocacy group, if you like. They provide a lot of information, a lot of education, a lot of seminars, webinars. They support research. They do a lot of stuff online for, for a person who cannot go out and about. Maybe there are online exercise classes and so on.
Okay, and I'm sure all of that sort of is branched off the information hub for the Donegal support group. Where can people find that if they're interested, Tina, to find out about any of these events or other information?
In the Letterkenny area, myself or Roy, Roy's phone number is 087-3929-776.
I think what we might do is we'll retain all of those contacts then, right? Because people won't necessarily have a pen and paper. So what we'll do, Tina, off air, is we'll get the various contacts for the various regions, and then if anyone contacts us, we can pass that on. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tina. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Lovely to chat to you. Go ahead.
There was a recent cycle carried out by Seamus White, and he did a 2,400-kilometre cycle around the Wild Atlantic Way raising funds for fibrosis. His mother actually died of fibrosis a few years ago, and he came from Waterford right along the south coast, up the west coast, into Donegal, stayed a night in Killybeg, stayed a night in Leo's in Annabry, and Bartley Brennan there, Moya Brennan's brother, was hugely supportive and did a bucket collection on the night and so on. And then he came through to, Seamus came through the following day to Letterkenny and did an Inishowen down as far as Malinhead and finished in Derry. So he spent 15 days cycling and raised quite a sum of money for the ELFA, the National Lung Fibrosis Association group. Brilliant. So it was good of Highland to publicise that and give him a little bit of support along the way. He was cycling entirely on his own. Yes. So thank you for that.
I think you just did. All right. Thank you very much indeed. That's Tina McGlynn speaking to us there. Let me see. CB on YouTube, watching on YouTube, makes a good point, actually. And this is why we have these conversations, because it helps us understand better. And he points out that high vises, I suppose, are not aerodynamic enough. There's too much drag. So I suppose if you're going out for a brisk walk, or presumably more so a cycle, and you probably have this flapping and the drag. Yeah, never thought about that. And I suppose there's a reason why cyclists in particular wear such tight clothing to avoid drag. So there you go. That's a practical reason as to why maybe compelling the wearing of them might not be practical. That's why we love this show. People messaging in and texting in. Rosina McLaughlin is chairperson of the Buncrana Leisure Centre Committee, and she joins me now. Good morning. Good morning, Rosina.
Good morning, Greg.
Now, following our debate earlier in the week between councillors Jack Chambers and Councillor Finan Bradley, any optimism I had about progress on the Buncrana Leisure Centre receded, I'll be completely honest with you. What is the situation? I'm sure you're getting a lot of inquiries as to the state of this project, when it might happen, blooming hell, if it might happen.
Yeah, it's gone on a long time, Greg. But honestly, I think it may finally be moving. We are now in the position that we are winding down. The Leisure Centre was initially made or instigated as a cooperative society limited, and then we got charitable status. So there is a procedure. It's not just like closing the doors of business. It has to be done legally. So we are now in the process of doing that, through a company in Dublin, to be able to hand the leisure centre over to the DCC. But all applications for grant funding have to go through the DCC, and they have to own the premises to hopefully get what's needed to build the new centre.
Rosina, why did it take? Because one of the criticisms that Councillor Bradley had was that this should have happened 10 years ago. The fact that it's only happening now has effectively been in the background stalling the project. Would you agree with that? And maybe you can talk as to why it's taken so long?
Well, that's certainly not our fault. The money just hasn't been allocated. Mm. Back in 2005, we were allocated $3.2 million to refurbish the centre. But that was never... never it went happened. Out to tender. Mm. It never happened, and the Donegal County Council did have control of that. Now, that funding is still there, was never drawn down, so we're hoping that it is still there to add to what we need now. But certainly, it should have happened. I mean, I remember Michael McGarvey from DCC at a meeting saying to me years ago, you'll have a leisure centre in 24. And I remember saying to him, Michael, that's ridiculous, that's too far away. And here we are in 26.
And I think and really, Rosina, no what you wanted to make sure that the public knew is that the committee have been working on this tirelessly, and progress is being made all the while, so as not to presume to take away from the efforts that have been put in to try and get this over the line. There's been no stubbornness or stalling from your committee, I take it.
Greg, you have no idea the amount of meetings, phone calls, emails. The public don't see what's been done behind, you know, unless you're out in the street protesting, which, to my mind, isn't going to get the job done. We are there behind the scenes negotiating all the time with the council, with the company in Dublin, with the auditors, everybody. Okay. We are working, and I assure the public that we're pushing this and we're not sitting back.
All right, Rosina, listen, thank you so much for your time. Rosina McLaughlin there, Chair of the Buncrana Leisure Centre Committee. And that's where we leave it on the show for today. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Tune in. We have our Friday panel where we'll debate some of the big issues of the day, of the week, and get the views of our panel in relation to that. That and so much more. Anything else on tomorrow that I need to mention, Caroline? No, she's speaking to someone else. What's on the show tomorrow? Anything else I need to mention? Just the usual. Okay, we're going to have summer bank holiday vibes, she tells me. I look forward to that. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9.